switch this on. The choice makes a difference. So something I'm going to take, kind of like, makes so, well, I started by thanking you for having me here. Peter Robert for inviting me as well. So it's quite a place to have here. And I enjoyed myself so far. So, I'd like to talk about some recent results obtained together with Wolfgang Müller and Hans Brieger in Innsbruck. Regarding ways of how to map certain classical systems, classical spin models, to problems in quantum physics, more particularly to the graph state formalism and the state matter formalism. So what is it all about? So we consider two distinct fields, you might say. On one hand, we consider classical spin models, such as the Ising model and the Pulse model, where you should think of the usual things people consider. You have a graph that brings classical spins on the vertices, and then they interact according to some classical planning. And these things will be related to problems in whole information theory, and more particularly to the graph state formalism, the state matter formalism also. So the idea will be to relate these two fields in a certain way. And we would like, with this connection, we would like to obtain a cross-localization between these two fields. So the idea is to use these mappings in two directions. So we would like to use some known results from statistical mechanics to learn something about the corresponding quantum objects and vice versa. And the main application which I will present here is centered around measurement-based quantum computation. So we will try to motivate an application where, in fact, two of them, so the one being using some large statistical mechanics to learn something about measurement-based quantum computation and vice versa. And results can be found in these two papers. So let me put up one slide and only one slide about these classical spin models. So as I said, the idea is to start from a graph, typically a lattice of some dimension, where you place spins SA on the nodes of the lattice. And the edges in the graph basically determine when a non-zero interaction can occur. So interactions are only over edges. If there is no edge between two points, then they don't interact. And the spins can take certain classical values, finite numbers. For instance, if the spins take values plus or minus one, and you consider this Hamiltonian, this is simply the Ising model. You can do this more generally, letting spins take more states, two states. Right? And then a typical model which has quite importance is the Pulse model, which has this Hamiltonian here. Details are not so important, but you can formulate several things in this way which have been studied quite extensively. And you can do this basically for any graph. Additionally, you could supplement such Hamiltonians, which only have parallax interactions, with external fields, magnetic fields, and they rise to terms of the Hamiltonian, which looks something like this. So this means that at every site, we produce a local field, which may or may not be the same for all spins in the lattice. Okay. So, and then an important concept in the study of these models is, of course, a partition function, which is defined as basically a sum of all these Boltzmann weights, so a sum of all spin configurations of this vector here, where this H can be of either of these Hamiltonians. And the importance of this partition function, as you probably know, is that it acts as a generating function for the thermodynamic properties of the system. So if you know the partition function, you can derive properties such as free energy or magnetization or stuff like that. And so also this partition function will be the point where we will make the connection with the quantum physics. So this is an important object also for us. So now we start with basically the first part of the talk. So the talk will consist of three parts. In the first two, we will just explain the mappings, how they work. And the first part will be mappings from spin modes without external fields to quantum physics. The second mapping will be spin modes with external fields. And this, we make a separation because things are quite different qualitatively whether you have a model with or without a field. So for instance, also in the more classical theory of these models, the addition of an external field can increase the complexity of a model in quite a huge amount. And we will see also that this is reflected in the quantum states which appear. Okay.
Martin, when you say when you leave out the magnetic fields, where you have only the couplings, would you consider planar models?
Anything.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the third part will be application of these mappings to certain problems in measuring this quantum computing. Okay, so the first mapping will be spin models without external fields. And for simplicity, we will always consider the Ising model, but things will be more general. So the idea is to start from the lattice on which the model is defined, and using this lattice we will construct a state which will allow us to make the mapping. And the states which we will define will always be stabilized states. Right? And if the states which we will obtain as corresponding to models without external fields will be states similar to the ones which Kitaev has introduced in his work on topological quantum computing. So the construction will be the following. So first, you will start with the graph on which your initial classical model is defined. And you associate with this graph a Hilbert space by placing on every edge of the graph one qubit. So you have a Hilbert space with as many qubits as there are edges in the lattice. And then on this Hilbert space you define certain operators, which will be Pauli operators. The first kind is one where you single out one vertex and you look at all edges which are incident with this vertex. And all these edges correspond to one qubit and you place an X operator on all these qubits. And in this sense, here you will get a four-body X operator. And you do that for every vertex in the lattice. Similarly, you construct certain Z-type operators, where you now look at the plaquettes in the lattice, or the cycles. And for every third cycle, you place a Z operator on all the edges in this cycle. And in this sense, well, you get a four-body Z-type operator, and you do this for all the cycles, for all the plaquettes in the lattice. And in this sense, you obtain a set of Pauli operators which commute, and which are complete in the sense that they have a unique simultaneous fixed point. So there's one state which is a fixed point of all these guys simultaneously. And this unique fixed point will be, as we denoted, the state psi g. And this is, for instance, how these Kitaev states are defined. So a bit of a technical slide, which will allow to make the connection later with statistical physics. So next to the expansion, next to the description of these states in terms of stabilizers, you can also look at an expansion in terms of the computational basis, which also is quite simple. So this is the following. So you obtain an expansion of computational basis states with equal coefficients in the following way. So you sum over all binary strings T, where T is a binary string where every component is associated with the vertex of the lattice. So on every vertex you place a 0 or 1. And then you take, you apply to this vector T, this matrix B here, which is called the incidence matrix of the graph, which is somehow a standard graph theoretical object. I mean, I won't define what this matrix is. It's just easier to explain what these objects look like. So such a vector B transpose T is again a binary string It has as many components as there are edges in the lattice. And for an edge with endpoints AB, the corresponding component is basically just the difference of TA and TB. So TA being the value of T on spin A and TB similar. And this difference here is taken modulo 2, so you could just as well try that plus. Anyway, you make such strings for all configurations of the spins T, and you sample for them. In this case, you the state. So then we can say what the mapping actually is. So just to remind you, we are talking about easy models without external fields. And what we've done so far is associated with the interaction pattern with the graph state. We said nothing yet about the couplings. And to encode the couplings, we will just consider a bunch of single qubit states. So for every edge and beam, we will consider a single qubit state defined on the corresponding qubit of this volume. So you see here that the temperature and also the couplings occur in a very natural way here. And in this sense, we've got a collection of single qubit states. And then the partition function is, in fact, very easily written in this way here. So it is an overlap between two states. The one is the entangled lifetime states, the state life state. And on the other end, you have here the product state. So note that there is quite a clear separation here between this guy and this guy, in the sense that the stabilizer state itself only says something about the pattern of the interaction and says nothing about the couplings. And this product state just locally encodes how strong the interaction is and what the temperature is. So this is quite a clean.
So I'm sure. Yes, a question about, so the stabilizer state is, you know, it's a port is in the Hilbert space of states of the qubits, right? Oh, by AB you mean the edges,
yes.
And
yes.
Those are exactly where the qubits are.
Yes, exactly. And so this thing is actually quite easy to prove if you take this expansion into account. Looking at the stabilizer picture is a bit more difficult, but once you have this, the relation follows quite easily. This is why I bothered you with that. Okay. So just to conclude that first mapping, so these states psi g give you Eisenhower's without external fields via this yellow equation. And I want to emphasize the generality of this whole construction in the sense that it holds for arbitrary graphs and it can easily be extended to, for instance, a POTS model and even more general Q state models. So, in this, if you look at Q state models, the idea is to construct stabilizer states which are no longer qubit states. But the elementary Hilbert space is just a few dimensions. And then you can again define a stabilizer state with respect to these other spaces and a formula similar to this is obtained. So let's look at some examples. But how much time do we have for this talk? Is it half an hour?
About 40 minutes. 40 minutes?
Okay.
Should have any questions.
Okay. So let's look at the simplest model, which is conceivable, just a 1D chain, and an easy one on this chain without magnetic field. So this model is in fact quite trivial, so there is nothing special to it. It can be solved in a couple of lines. So you would expect that the corresponding state is also an easy state. And in fact, this is true because the corresponding state, psi g, is basically just a complete product state as well, it's just a plus. Okay, so this somehow nicely corresponds. If you would look at the 1D easy model, again without magnetic field, but now on the ring, this is also quite simple. And the only technical difficulty which occurs here with respect to here is that now you have a graph with a cycle. The graph is a cycle. So you expect some structure to appear there. And in fact, what you find now in place of the product state is the GHS state. So the 1D easy model with periodic boundary conditions now corresponds to GHS state, which already has so much time. And then the 2D lattice, either with open or chaotic boundary conditions, as I mentioned before, this recovers the plane of code states and the atomic code states. And I have to say that this fact here, the last one, was already noted, in fact, sometime before we did this. So I'll work here, I guess, with this motion framework. So that was the first mapping. Let's now look at the second one, where we have spin models with external fields. So once again, we will have to define certain states. They will again be stabilizer states, and they will be again defined on the basis of the lattice we start from, but in a bit different way. So let's again look at the 2D lattice. And we again associate a certain Hilbert space with this lattice, but now the Hilbert space will be bigger, of course, in respect to the previous case. So also here, we place a qubit, the blue one, on every edge of the lattice, similar to the previous case. But there are more qubits present here now. So also for every edge, for every vertex, sorry, we place here the red guy, and this is also a bunch of qubits. So the Hilbert space contains as many qubits as there are vertices plus edges in the system. And then you can again define the necessary stabilizer operators. So the first thing you do is you fix the vertex, like this one, and you place x operators on the edges which are incident with this one, and you place an x operator on the vertex qubit itself. So in this case, you get a fire body operator. And you do this again for every vertex in the lattice. And then similarly, you construct a stabilizer operator for every edge. So you consider an edge here. You put a z on the x on the x qubit defined on it and on the two endpoints. So you have a z operator with three vectors for every edge. Okay. So again, here you can show that these operators decommute. They are complete, and they define a unique simultaneous fixed point, which is again a stabilizer state. And this will now be denoted with phi g. And you might notice that the construction here has some differences with the previous one. In particular, the notion of these packets or cycles is still be absent here. So this is quite different from the previous one. However, there is quite a strong similarity if you again look at this expansion in the computational basis. So, just recall that the previous states in the first part were simply these guys. Okay, so this is a Hilbert space as large as a number of edges. And now you just circumvent it with this guy. So this T here is again a binary string with as many components as there are vertices. This is just an LCM. So B would correspond to the red qubits and these to the blue guys. And again, this expansion allows you to make the link with the partition function. And so these states, in fact, have quite a strong connection with the usual definition of a graph state. So there are many papers about graph states, and this is in fact yet another way to associate a stabilizer state with a graph, but then the traditional one. And this construction here is in fact very closely related to this. And this is seen by applying to this state Hadamard operation on all the qubits associated with the edges. So if you apply Hadamard on all guys here, you end up with a graph state in the usual sense. And for all purposes, you can consider this graph state simply to be the graph state associated with the lattice you start from. And technically, it is a bit different. You should look at the decorated version of the lattice, which would mean something like this, right? So if you start with a graph state, sorry, if you start with a 2D lattice, corresponding graph state would be this guy. But this state has, well, many of the same properties as the usual graph states. That's a technicality you shouldn't worry about. So this is why we call these cluster type states. So for instance, the graph, if the graph would be a 1D chain, then this guy would simply be a 1D cluster state. Also. Okay, so what is the mapping? It's again very similar to the one we had before. So we are now considering Heising models with external fields. And again, we have already defined the state corresponding to the pattern of the interaction. Now we need the couplings. And this is just the same thing as we had before, supplemented with something else. So these guys we already had. For every edge, we look at this single qubit state placed on the edge, which has the couplings of the parents interaction in it. And then here, you additionally place a single qubit state on every vertex, which has the values of the local field state. And then again, the formula is completely similar. The overlap is obtained, the partition function is obtained as an overlap between these two states, the entangled state and the product state. So that's the summary of the second. So also here it's quite general, it works for Q-state models and so on and so on. So examples. So as I said before, if you compare models in the presence or the absence of an external field, things can be quite different, especially regarding the complexity of solving the model. So you would expect that also the states which appear here with respect to the previous guys will are thought to be quite different. And this in fact turns out to be the case. So if you would look here at the 1D Heising model, now with open Lauli conditions, but with magnetic field, you no longer get a product state than before, but in fact you get a 1D cluster state, which is significantly higher in time. And then the same for the ring cluster, it's again the ring 1D Heising model, it will give you a 1D ring cluster state. And then for the 2D Heising model, it will basically find the cluster state itself, the 2D cluster state. So that, for comparison, the 2D model without field is a Kipari spinner code state. And if you add the model, if you add the field, you will get a 2D cluster state. So far for the mappings, so we will now try to see about some applications. But I'd also like to say that it is at least our belief that the fact that such mappings exist in itself is already a certain interest, we hope, in the sense that you, with these mappings, you somehow connect fields which seem to be quite different, and you connect them at quite a fundamental level, in the sense that a partition function is something of interest, and also a quantum mechanical overlap or amplitude is also something which is of sort of interest, I guess. So, I guess it would be much better if I could convince you about the applications. So let's try to do that. So the idea is to, as I said before, to apply this mapping in two directions. So using whatever knowledge is around about physical mechanics, and that's a lot, to learn something about these states and to learn something about tasks for which they may be used in quantum information. And on the other hand, you will try to use some insight from quantum information theory, insights about the state isomorphism and quantum computation, to learn something about these classical models. And so, I mean, this whole research is quite young, so I cannot give you a long list of applications, and the main application which we have so far is centered about measuring this quantum computing, since the news releases somehow are pretty.
A fully trivial question. If you can put the screen of your computer down a little bit, we'll remove that block from some of us.
You could have asked this very
you can just let the screen down.
If you tilt it the other way, you'll get to see the screen as well. If you open it up,
obtuse angle.
I didn't get any of that.
Probably just an obtuse angle.
So is it not okay or not?
It's okay for us. If you want to see your own laptop, maybe you
can. I'm going to look here, that's fine. So. The first connection is, or the first application is in some sense the easy direction. So we will try to use whatever we can gather from physical mechanics to learn something about measurements computing. And so one question one could very quickly ask about these states, even the psi g's or the phi g's, is whether they can be used to do measurement-based computing. So can they serve as decent resources similar to the process? And so questions you might ask is, for instance, if you consider such a resource state psi g or phi g, does it offer any possible computational speedup with respect to classical computation, or is it simply efficiently simulatable? Now, if you ask such questions about simulatability, there is a central object which you should look at, and this is exactly the overlap between the resource states and possible product states. Because these things tell you with which probabilities the outcomes of the local measurements will occur. So if you would try to simulate a measurement process on such states, you will have to be able to compute these overlaps, so at least their modulus. And what the connection which we have here now tells us is that exactly these overlaps are connected with the partition function. So if you would have a model which is solvable, namely a model where the partition function can be computed in some closed form, you will find that the corresponding resource state is simulated. It's in some sense useless for measuring this computing. So for example, if you look at the plane and code states, which corresponds to the 2D Ising model without magnetic field, it's known that this 2D Ising model without field is solvable, although this is a very non-trivial result. But this will then, if you use the mapping, will show that these plane and code states are simulatable resources. And this was first proven by Sergey Gavin and Robert, where they used the fact that the mapping exists in this particular point, which we already know to detect and so on. So I think this is quite a nice application, because the way you prove that the 2D Ising model is solvable is with the transfer matrix method, and this mapping now allows you to just use this non-trivial way of computing a partition function to say something about simulatability. And therefore to introduce somehow this technique into the field of measuring this computing. Okay. So on the other hand, if you would have an intractable model, like a 2D model with field, or a 3D model and so on, then very likely the corresponding resource state will give you something useful. So I have here a small table with some examples. So on the left is some possible Ising models, on the right the corresponding resource state. So this is using our mappings for the cases of 1D and 2D. So for instance, for 1D, everything is completely solvable, either with or without field. And you naturally find that the corresponding states, be it the product state or 1D cluster state, are indeed simulatable resources. Okay. Then if you would have a 2D model, then as I said, without field, it is solvable, gives you a plane and code state, which is simulated. But if you have a field present, then immediately you end up in an empty hard problem. So you expect that the corresponding state is indeed something useful. And in fact, this is very much the case, because the corresponding state is a 2D cluster state, which is universal. So this mapping is certainly, tells you something. Now, I don't think this list is everything there is. So basically, what these mappings now tell you is that whenever you have some kind of simulation technique, or not simulation, a method present here, which allows you to solve certain models, then presumably you can transfer this using the mapping to find new techniques for the simulation of measuring-based computing. Now, this thing is not really immediate. If you look at this paper, then there is some additional work needed to conclude that simulation is possible. But it is, I think it's safe to say that it is really the heart of the method. So. Okay. So now, so this was the first application. Let's now look at a second. And this is, of course, a bit an unfair comparison in the sense that measurement-based computing has this like couple of years old. Statistical mechanics is much more than a couple of years old, so trying to find an equally fair application in the same direction is not totally honest, but we'll try to do that anyway. So what we will find here is a following property of the 2D easing model with magnetic fields. So we will find that if you have a 2D square lattice of appropriate size, and you are allowed to tune the couplings on all edges as you wish, and you're also allowed to tune the magnetic field as you wish, then you will recover as special cases of this problem all possible partition functions on all possible graphs in this model. So in this sense, the 2D Ising model with inhomogeneous magnetic fields and so on is a universal or complete model. It contains all other models as a special case. And this basically follows immediately from the mapping plus the property that the 2D cluster states are universal states. So let me try to sketch the proof, not so much detail, but let me try. So remember that the 2D Ising model with magnetic fields is mapped to the 2D cluster state with this equation. On the other hand, the 2D cluster state is universal. So what does that mean? It means that if you have an arbitrary n qubit state, psi, which is defined on an arbitrary number of qubits, then you can always write it in this way. And this equation basically specifies a certain measurement branch of a measurement-based computing implemented on the cluster state, which allows you to prepare the state on a subset of the qubits. So this, for instance, this state beta here is a product state applied on all the qubits which are measured, and it specifies basically the measurement basis and also the outcome which you obtain. And then here you do nothing on certain qubits, and it is on these qubits that you obtain the desired state as an output. And this kind of here is, well, it's not so important. This is it's called a byproduct operator. This is simply a local quality operator. It's not so important. But the point is that you can do this for any state which you want. And additionally, if your output state psi is a state value state, then the number of qubits for the 2D cluster which you need is only polynomially bigger than this n here. So you need only polynomially more qubits in your 2D lattice to prepare a state value state. And moreover, all these objects here, the byproduct and the basis of the measurement, can be determined efficiently. So the only thing to do now is to plug as your desired output state one of these guys here, phi g, where g is some arbitrary graph, and this phi g would be the graph state corresponding to the easing model on the superior disk. But at the same time, using the mapping, you know that the partition function in this model can be written as the overlap between phi g and a bunch of graph states. But if you were now to insert this thing in here, you find that this partition function here can be written as an overlap between this cluster state and a bunch of proper states. But we know by reusing the mapping that this is in fact an instance of the partition function on the 2D model. So we find that this thing, this partition function on the graph G, is a special case or can be seen as a partition function on 2D lattice in this sense. And so the couplings in the 2D lattice are depending on the original graph. You are depending also on these couplings here. And since this guy is a state value state, the number of qubits you need for the lattice, the 2D lattice, is only polynomially bigger than the original graph. So this procedure is sufficient. So in this sense, as I said, the 2D Ising model, the partition function of this model is a complete model, contains all possible partition functions as special cases. So one or two remarks here. So the couplings which you would need in the 2D model here are typically complex couplings. which is quite a non-physical thing. But it doesn't seem that there is a way around this. So we need some kind of roots of unity and so on, which don't correspond to proper physical properties. And also, the magnetic fields which you need here are almost always highly homogeneous. So it's not that a nice homogeneous model here is transformed into a homogeneous model. This is all not so nice. But on the other hand, the method is completely constructive. So if you give me a graph and you give me the couplings, it will be possible to compute on how many qubits to 2D lattice needs to be defined, and it will be possible to compute the correct couplings from the model from all efficient. And perhaps, also remarkably, that you can generalize these results to Q-state models, but in a very specific way, in the sense that the partition function of the 2D ISO model, so keeping the two-state model, still contains the Q-state models, like the POTS model, in the special case. So the plus or minus from model still contains Q-state models, like the POTS model, as a special case. And also the overhead space of the model for POTS types models. So let me briefly try to explain that. So the idea is, if you look at Q-state models such as a POTS model, you need state lattice states on Q-dimensional systems instead of qubits. However, you can embed such systems into qubits, and since a state lattice state defined on Q-dimensional systems can be prepared by a polysized network in terms of Q-dimensional gates, it can also be efficiently prepared in terms of a network of qubit gates. And therefore, the whole polynomial overheads business is still just probably a very bad explanation.
Okay, could I ask a question here?
Yeah.
So that seems to include all models or partition functions which can be written as an overlap between the stabilizer state and the local state. So are these all partition functions that you could come up with?
Most likely not, but it's you can write all partition functions as an overlap between A states and the local states. And then you can still use this universality result, but still overhead is then possibly exponential. Okay. So this is the result in the other direction. So what is the main message at least according to us is that you use quite a well-known result from QRT to learn something about the statistical physics. Now this universality of cluster state is in fact it's a well-known thing. And the proof of this property uses typical quantum computation concepts, right? Universal gate sets, measurements, state transformers, and so on. And this mapping now allows you to again use these techniques in a different area, which we think might have some problems. And I mean, in some sense, it's even quite trivial that this completeness property follows from the universality of the cluster states. You don't need many arguments, so it intuitively it's not so hard to understand, I think. But on the other hand, we've shown these results to a bunch of people in statistical mechanics, and they all found this very surprising that this 2D lattice is able to contain, for instance, a 3D lattice as a special case. So there may be something. Okay, just to mention that there are other applications there. I won't go into them, but we do have some other ideas. So let me just conclude. So what we've done is to introduce mappings from spin models to quantum states, or particularly the stabilized formalism. The mappings are very general, so this mapping whole classes of models to a whole class of states. And well-known states in quantum information theory are distance links to well-known models in statistical mechanics. This has led us to a certain range of application within measurements. quantum computation. Okay, so that's all. Thanks a lot for listening.
So this mapping is kind of an obvious quantum algorithm to approximate the, I guess that was maybe one of the points you skipped over towards the end.
It's also in here, yes.
Okay, yeah, so my question was, so for instance, there's this recent paper on an algorithm for approximating the Clause model. So I was wondering how these algorithms compare to performance.
Yeah, we are wondering the same thing. So they are very, very similar in setup, in the sense that what this thing allows you to do is you can very quickly write a partition function as like zero state, unitary, and zero state, where the unitary is an efficient circuit. And this is also how Adler does it in her papers. But it seems that there is a difference in efficiency in that she's able to conclude that her algorithm is BKP complete, which is somehow hinting that it's not trivial, and we cannot come to the same conclusion. There seems to be a difference in normalization there, which we don't know how to get rid of.
So what that means that your approximation is less accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
There seems to be an exponential difference in the accuracy.
Okay. But on the other hand, it's maybe shorter. I mean, certainly it's constant depth.
Yeah, the algorithm would be simple, but I'm not sure if the result would be so.
So what about 3D models, like the 3D icing model? Have you looked at with that? I mean, does that correspond to some stabilizer state? Or?
I mean, this is all for any graph. So.
It was for any graph.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what state does the 3D icing model state correspond to then?
I mean, if you have the 3D icing plus magnetic field, it's simply the 3D plus state. And in the case without magnetic field, you have something similar to the Torrey Code state, but then for a 3D lattice plus. I have no idea how that state could look like, for instance, in terms of coefficients or so. So I don't think it's a state which I haven't studied so far.
So you obtain from the cluster state. I mean, so again, it is a cluster state with sort of whether you have qubits on the vertices and on the edges.
Right.
And sort of, if you remove the magnetic field, that means X measurement of the vertex qubit, so to speak.
Okay.
And that leaves you with a stabilizer. Sort of, it's a sixfold X stabilizer associated with every vertex. The adjacent edges all carry a sigma X.
Right.
And you have sigma Z stabilizers associated with the plaquettes, I mean, on the boundary of the plaquettes.
For the plaquettes, not for the cubes.
For the plaquettes.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe you can, as you had it on sort of the slide that you skipped over, maybe you can say a little bit about duality relations. I think you remember from your paper from October last year that you relate the duality, low high temperature duality relations to stabilize the element that you put out of the stabilizer state and let them act on the local state.
You're somehow missing two sections in the paper.
Okay, so then please clarify. But what my question is, I mean, these are sort of local transformations. They change something in the neighborhood of a certain point in the lattice, whereas these low temperature dualities are a global property. And maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, I mean, in my understanding, these high-low duality relations are not a local property, so they work even if every edge has a different weight, and so in this sense it's local.
Mm-hmm.
But so the point would be that it's well known that you can relate the partition function of a planar graph in a low-temperature regime to the partition function of the dual graph in the high temperature region. That's all known. And in this picture, this is quite an easy translation, in the sense that you can go from the states defined on the graph to the states defined on the dual graph by applying a Hadamard operation on all kilos. So in this sense, by then plugging in this identity into these partition functions, you immediately recover these high low temperature duality relations. So the duality in a classical partition function is now transformed to a Hadamard operation, a positive Fourier transform, which is somehow clear that this is embodying some kind of duality. So this is this answering your question?
Yeah, this is answering my question, and now I understand why you said I mixed up these two sections. So that is not pulling out stabilizer operators and letting them act on the other side. So have you found useful applications for doing that?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of abstractly described it, might be, how you could map higher dimensional systems into a 2D icing model on the statistical physics side. Do you have any more concrete ideas how you might perhaps use this to compute something in higher dimensional models by using lower dimensional models, by using the quantum information side?
Computes, how you mean? Classical?
Yeah, quantities. I mean, quantities that are difficult to compute.
I mean, there are some roots here. People have put some effort in trying to compute, for example, overlaps between entangled states and product states. And one way to look at this is to use tree tensor networks, or for instance, the PEPS method. And the translation of these partition functions into this language presumably allows to use some of these techniques to do that. For example, the 2D cluster state is an example of a PEPS with simple tensors in there. So you might think of applying these methods to at least approximate these partition functions, but we haven't done it. That could not be better.
Have you thought about extending the models to quantum models and other types of spin models?
Not really. I mean, there's always this every d-dimensional quantum model is similar or is mapped to a d plus one dimensional classical. This mapping already exists. So you could, in this sense, the mapping also goes from quantum to quantum, but eventually this gives some insight. Other than that, we have this.
Let's speak again.